Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's Tim here on the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, back in my home office, hence the echoey acoustics. But thank you very much for listening. This is the second podcast of the week. Once again, we have three for you. Tomorrow, you will be getting the Midweek Domestic Podcast, which is talking about all things Avicii Premiership, Pro 12, and looking ahead to a big weekend of European rugby. We've already released our review of England versus Australia and some other big themes in the world of rugby, but right now, it's time to go behind enemy lines once more and one final time with the green and gold boys from Australia, our counterparts on the other side of the world. They've had a tough old 2016, but fair play to them. They're willing to front up once again. So this is me chatting with Hugh, with Reg and with Matt.
Hello everyone. Now, it's been a tough week for Wallaby fans. It's been a tough season. And anyone saw the post-match press conference would have seen Michael Checker, our coach, looks quite depressed. So we're looking for ways that we can cheer him up, if possible. Matt Rowley, welcome to the show. How are we going to cheer up Check?
Well, mate, I'd soften him up by letting him know he doesn't have to play England next year. So that one's off the card. But then the bombshell I'd drop is that the sex tape I've got between Eddie Jones and Hansen, Steve Hansen. So I've been keeping it on the down low. Not many people should see it or should ever want to see it. But I just figure, you know, it's going to take drastic measures to cheer up. So I might pull it out of the bottom drawer now for that.
If that's going to cheer him up, I guess he needs it. Hugh Cavill, how do we cheer up Check?
Matt, actually, on that point, Matt, about that tape, I was wondering why for our Facebook Live you had such an elaborate video set up that you own. So that is sort of explains a few things. Oh, look, I think the ultimate Christmas present for Check, if someone can get it for him, is just maybe a 24-hour immunity from World Rugby sanction. So, you know, we can give him one thing, a pass on anything. He can abuse a cameraman. He can smash a commentary, a coach's box window. He can fire off about a ref. Just give him an hour, you know, an hour where everyone agrees to look the other way and he can go bananas.
It's like that movie, The Purge. He's just got 24 hours and anything goes.
I like that.
Exactly.
Love it. Love it. Now, I mentioned it's been a tough year for us, for Australian rugby. And what's probably made it so much harder for us here in the Green and Gold Rugby Show, it's this commitment we had to linking up with the Egg Chaser lads at the start of the season, and we've followed it through now, and would you believe we've followed it through once again. So joining us tonight is a very special guest, and I say that all tongue-in-cheek. We're thrilled to have him on board, and we've enjoyed the cohabitation this year, and it's Tim Cocker. How are you going, Tim?
Very well. We've enjoyed it as well. And what honour you guys have got, because I would have imagined maybe there would have been some internet problem or technical hitch to have prevented me from coming on. But no, fair play. Good on you.
Yeah, thanks, mate. And thanks for having us. Any thoughts on how we cheer up Check now that you're in the position to understand Aussie coaches a little bit better?
Yeah, by the way, I'm not looking the other way if Michael Checker has a 24-hour pass. I've got front row seats and some popcorn. I would love to see that. But I just think at times like this, you just need to just have a couple of beers. And I think while he's in Europe, before he goes home, I don't know if they're already on the plane home, or hopefully he had a good old bender with Kirtley Beale and James O'Connor. Those boys have got some form, and I reckon they'd have cheered him up.
Yeah, I think Czechs hang over in Europe a little while longer, so maybe it'll happen.
So just guys, if there are any sort of interference on the line, I have had to pay quite a lot to get the SMARM and the GLOAT wall, firewall down between the UK and Australia. So we've only got it down. We've only got it down for a little while. If you suddenly get cut off, Tim, it's not us, mate. It's just the GLOAT wall that might have gone back.
Do you know what's been flying around in the UK so much in the rugby fraternity up here is that Fox Sports advert with Horan and Kafer and Kearns and co. Just keeps it, with every win from England, it just gets that little bit sweeter.
Didn't they try to delete it off the system after that first test?
They did.
Saved it, yeah.
Yeah, we made sure we had it saved.
God.
That's brilliant. All right, well, we're going to get stuck into it, guys. We've got five burning questions tonight, which I'll run over for you quickly now before Tim helps us out with answering the first couple. So the first question is, what was the biggest factor in the result on the weekend? Question two, simply England, arse or class? Question three, does Australia have a discipline issue? Question four, what do we learn from this tour as a whole? And question five, we've had the State of Origin concept being proposed for the June window next year to keep rugby in the public eye. What's the best option for the AU to do here? And we're going to talk about some ideas we have on that one as well. So let's start it off. Tim, you're our guest, but you're going to have to sit back and wait and listen to this for a little while. I'm going to start with you, Matt. Biggest factor in the result on the weekend, mate.
I think everybody is waiting for me to just wade in on Jaco Pyper, aren't they? But I can't. I can't say that, actually. Look, it's going to be a theme that's going to run throughout. I think the biggest thing here is it was the Wallabies themselves. I think they came out in those first 20 minutes. They showed what they could do. And then I thought, you know, yeah, I think, what did they get to, like 10 points or so? But when they missed those, was it two or three tries held up, I think they were starting to think,
yep,
this isn't going to be our night, and then, or our afternoon maybe, and then they just had that. It's kind of punctuated throughout this whole series this year. They just had that, you know, calamity, you know, stuff up between Phipps and Kepu, leading to the most, you know, to yet another peach of a, you know, kick through, bounce up perfectly into your hands under the posts. Is it Jonathan Joseph who keeps doing it?
Yep.
You know, and I think that was it. I think they just looked at each other. And I must admit, I had mentally pictured that sort of thing happening as well. You know, and it seems to be something that this team is kind of prone to at the moment, of those mishaps, whether it comes from a ref or whether it comes from the other team, largely caused by ourselves. And I'll maybe go into some stats about that later. But I thought it was that. I thought, you know, Australia came out, just looked absolutely 10 out of 10. Probably some of the stuff we'd seen there is some of the best attack in the world this year, in structured play. But, you know, then just kind of, I think they mentally dissolved when, you know, those things just didn't go their way. And then you had that, you know, kick in the nuts and try under the posts.
Yeah, fair call. Tim, I'm interesting to sort of know your interpretation of two things. You know, did England start slow? You know, what was the reason for that slow start? But then what turned it around? What got England back in that game?
I've got to tell you, I thought the game was done at 20 minutes.
Me
too.
Yep.
This is a horror show from England. And I think one of the key elements there was, unlike in some of the tests in June when England managed to nullify Pooper, they really got to George Ford and really put him under pressure, and there was no fluency from England's game. Australia just started 100 miles an hour. It looked so good. But if I'm going to take it from the positive from England's point of view, I think the key factor, biggest factor in the result, was the mental fortitude that England now have. Because with that 20 minutes, there was cool heads and the way that they turned it around. And actually, you know, it was a level of streetwise performance from England. Like, for example, I think you Matt picked up on the Phipps Kepu mess up that led to one of the tries. That an experience, Ben Youngs, who I've got to say, fair play, boys. Back in June, we were all saying, you fear Ben Youngs? I don't know what it is against Australia, and recently he's just incredible. But he would have he would have managed to have won a penalty from Mako Vinopola, who was just lazily getting up off the deck. But Phipps tried to run around him, a bit too nice, and ended up bodging up the pass. So I think that there's a real steeliness about Eddie Jones and about this England team. And I think one England guy that embodies that, he's not totally fit, but I think Owen Farrell is so important on both sides of the game and just in general. I think he's actually the true leader of that team, for my money.
Yeah, really. That's a huge one, because, you know, he doesn't have the dominant... He keeps England in there. I see that, and he keeps the game going and all that sort of stuff to be that true leader. Here's an interesting one for you that I just picked up. So, you know, Stefan Nahavalu scores first. Looks fantastic. You know, we got 7-0, kick by Foley, 10-0. Farrell, the man, kick gets us back in, 10-3, 10-6. 29th minute, Jonathan Joseph scores his try. So remember that, 29th minute, Jonathan Joseph scores a try from a loose ball. Let's go back to June, what was it? June 11th, June 10th, Suncorp Stadium. Hooper scores early, Folau scores early, 10-0 to the Aussies. Farrell kicks a penalty, gets another penalty at the 32nd minute mark. So 29th minute this weekend, 39th minute, the 32nd minute start of the year, Jonathan Joseph scores a try from another loose ball. Phipps pass to, I think, Karevi that time instead of Kepu, and Jonathan Joseph scores a try. Those two moments are my turning points for those respective matches. It's like you said, Matt, it's when those heads started to drop, and I think the English realised that they could get back into this one.
And it was Groundhog Day, wasn't it? I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I was just watching it. You know, that you broke it down to that detail, Reg, is great, because it just felt to me, I had that Grace Jones song going in my head. Was it Strange I've Seen This Face Before? It was Strange I've Seen This Game Before. It was uncanny.
It was. Hugh, what about you, mate? What's your reading on all this?
Well, it's funny that you talk about us letting England into the game. I think we probably sell England a little bit short. And you look at Jonathan Joseph there. I mean, he scores that try in Suncorp. He scores the try at Twickenham, and he takes that intercept from David Pocock. I mean, the guy has a knack for this. You know, it's not just... He doesn't just bob up, you know, out of nothing and have these things handed to him. There's an obvious skill level that he has to put himself in these positions to take advantage of errors. And Australia did make, you know, as we have every game, a couple of key errors that let an opposition score a try. And that's what's been killing us. And England are a good enough team not to give us the flip side. They didn't give us, you know... Arguably, they probably gave us one tight head scrum in the fifth or sixth minute. But other than that, they really don't give you anything. And so the little shred of possession that you have and the few opportunities that you have, you've got to bank them. You've got to score those tries. And, you know, as much as we came away with points, most times we went into the England 22 in those first 30 minutes, it felt like when Folau knocked that ball on, when Kundrani got held up, when Kepu got held up, it just felt like we needed to score those tries. And instead of being 10-0, it's 14-0, it's 17-0. And all of a sudden, that's when the game starts to become, you know, starts to get away from England. And that's where we can really gain that confidence that we've been lacking. So I think you've just got to give full credit, you know, to England. Four games we've played against them, it's you know, you've got to admit it, they're just a better team. They're just a better team than us. And it came through in that second half where that mental fortitude that Tim spoke about just kicked in. They had confidence in everything they did. They trusted their systems. They got into the game and they took advantage of every single opportunity that we gave them. So, depressing. that was a factor. But just I think, yeah, Matt says it's the Wallabies. I say it's England.
No, I'm not taking all that graciousness, Hugh. Well, you can do that. I'm not going to go with that. So basically, you're saying Jonathan Joseph is like the error whisperer. So he kind of, you know, he kind of whispers into Phipps's ear, gets inside his head, makes him make the error. I think Jonathan Joseph looks like that annoying kid that used to play with the under-10s. He was always some winger. He was always kicking the ball through and just using his raw pace to burn the rest of us off. You know,
to be fair, can I just congratulate you? Sorry, guys. I just got to congratulate you. I think we've gone through 10 minutes of this podcast and you haven't mentioned a TMO, a knock on, a forward pass.
That's coming, don't worry.
We just wait till you leave. We just wait till you leave, Tim, and that's when we
don't want anyone holding us back on that. What about you, Reg? What do you reckon, mate?
I think it's almost been summed up there, and I'll get to a second point. Almost been summed up there already. I can't believe. I mean, there was times I was watching that first half an hour, and there was no way we were going to lose that game. And in fact, I thought we would run away with it. As you said earlier, the clinical nature of our attack early, Niavalu just looked superb. You know, we found space regularly. He showed his speed, that great finish of his own. But as we have all year, we've struggled to finish, haven't we? And we're in position so often. And you say we got held up and the disallowed Corandrani try from the Pocock tackle and so on, but we just don't have that ability to finish. And whatever England did, the difference between...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That Australia first half hour and Australia in the second half was just monumental. And to England's complete credit, they just ramped it up big time. But what I was going to say, what impresses me, maybe this is getting to the second question. Maybe I'll hold off on that point for the time being because it's probably relevant to that. But it's just, I don't know what happened. You know, normally Checker, I would have thought, is the type of guy. I've never sat in one of his halftime conversations, obviously, but I would have thought he would be the one that would get them spurred up, get them ready for that second half again, because that second half was pretty insipid, and England controlled it from the kickoff, and that's when Young's really stood up. His sort of box kicking and his guiding that team around was just superb.
He was brilliant. But yeah, I think that takes us in the second one, mate.
Yeah. So the second question is England Arsenal class, and Tim, this one I will throw straight to you, mate. Stand up for your team.
14 wins, unbeaten in a calendar year, I think speaks for itself. There will be people that will say, oh, well, you've not played New Zealand, but we have played Australia four times, three of those in Australia, of course. So, do you know what? I am feeling very good as an England rugby fan, but I also think we need to throw congratulations at Australia because you're record breakers this year as well. Well done.
I heard this. All right, break it for us, mate. What was it?
The most defeats of any international team in a calendar year.
Ever.
This ever by anyone, apparently.
Nine.
Holy hell.
And the most points conceded by an international team in a calendar year.
Wow. So
look, congratulations, guys.
I don't think the sex tape's going to do it anymore. I didn't realise it.
Let me stick up quickly on this one, because I also think we also have another record, which is the hardest schedule faced by any team ever. The longest and hardest schedule. 15 games, no gimmies, 7 against the best, the best two teams in the world, and then, another 5 away in the Northern Hemisphere to pretty good Northern Hemisphere sides. There's no Fijis in it. There's no Samoas. We don't get a gimme against Italy or Fiji at Twickenham, which we'd all love to do. So that's my count.
Do you know what? I had that little stat up my sleeve in case you guys got too salty about losing, but you haven't, and now I just feel bad.
Yeah.
but now you look like a bad winner, mate.
I will 100% defend England as having class. What they have is incredible strength in depth in positions now. Again, Maro Itoje wasn't there, and Courtney Laws plays incredibly well. Joe Launchbury played incredibly well in previous tests. He wasn't even available because of a suspension. Jonathan Joseph probably wouldn't have been starting if everybody was fit. And look at the game he had. Who knows what we're going to actually select as our centres when Manu Tuilagi's back. Henry Slade was on the bench, and he's an absolutely amazing talent. Marlon Yard was brought in because of his defensive skill. Crikey, he looked like he really? Never played rugby before in that first 20 minutes. So I think this is an absolutely amazing crop of players. And some of them are just moving into the area where you can start to talk about them in the world-class bracket. Owen Farrell being one, Billy Vunipola being another. And I think there's a Mako Vunipola potentially a couple of years from now and a few others. So I think that there's still evolution to happen and there's some really exciting players to come into this team over the next few years. I think 100% England is class.
Well, and this is my point, and it goes along the lines. You mentioned depth, and the sign of a good team for me is when they can bring in players and those players stand up. Tom Wood, Nathan Hughes, two in particular, I thought, in this game were fantastic. Put aside Wood's swimming effort up the side of that mall there, but yeah. Those two guys were fantastic.
Oh, and that's how he picked up the ball offside in a ruck and ran.
Yeah, yeah,
40
and ran
meters.
Straight through. Yeah.
Bullshit.
But he got away with it. But Marlon Yard's another one who I don't rate as a player. He always looks dodgy at. But in the two games he's played for Australia, he's pulled out massive plays that have been significant towards the game. And that's what you're looking for on your team. That depth, and say you should with the players' numbers and the resources and all that sort of stuff. But the quality of those players, that team on its own, but the depth that's coming through too is just sensational. I'm blown away from it. A question before to you, Tim. I was on one of your digital sports channels early this morning, your time over there, and they finished by asking me the question, this English team and what they've achieved this year versus the 2003 World Cup winners. Who's better?
Oh, there's no question the 03 team are way better. They had, when you actually look back at that 03 team, they had true world-class players, the best in their position in about six or seven positions on the field, key positions as well. So there's no way, you can't compare the two yet. This one swallow doesn't make a summer, and you don't just go a calendar year unbeaten and start declaring yourself the best in the world. I mean, you just have to look at New Zealand. It's a decade of consistency that gets you to that level, and it was a year like this that England built upon to lead up to 2003 in Sydney and the World Cup win. So it's what you do now that defines you as a team. So we're not getting ahead of ourselves, don't worry.
Good stuff. Same answer. All right, Hugh, what about you, mate? It feels odd, you know, us having to sit here with Tim and blow smoke up his ass, but it seems fairly legit.
Yeah, it does. It does, doesn't it? I mean, and they are class, as I said before. It's just, that Nathan Hughes sums it up. You know, the really good teams in the All Blacks in their prime, which they probably still are, have this ability to pull these inexperienced. I remember, buddy, Stephen Luatua did it to us a few years ago, and every year there's someone, Anton Lennart-Brown, someone comes out of nowhere, debutant, you think, we've got a shot at this bloke, you know, he'll be a liability. And they come out and play like a 100-test veteran. And Hughes, by the end of the game, was running with seven blokes hanging off him. And you go, where's this bloke come from? You know, he's got no right to be doing that.
And Fiji is the answer.
Yes. Well, we can't really talk after talking up 7 hours. Look, just that ability, you know, and that depth, as Tim talked about, you know, especially in the second row where we can't find a second row to save ourselves, where England have probably got six or seven, you know, properly good second rowers. And buddy, Ben Young's lobbing up those box kicks just inch perfect on the spot. And we, you know, even Folau was struggling with them, and that, I think, that's about as high a praise as you can have on a box kick. It's so ruthless and so clinical. And it was typified in that last sort of 10-minute stretch where we were just trying to run the ball out of our 22. And even against a fairly tight England defence, we were just getting driven back and back and back, and pretty demoralising sight for an Australian rugby fan. So, there's not much I could say. It's just been one of those years.
Your last three or four contributions, Hugh, have all finished with just a big sigh.
Yeah. Hugh, someone take Hugh's shoelaces off him.
He's already in the cell.
We can't. We don't hold the ashes. I mean, we can. I'm trying to think of a recent sporting success over sevens. I mean, I think the sevens, the women's sevens, can we talk about that still? I think I've been holding on to that for about 7 months now. So
death spiral there. Well, look, let me come out swinging then.
Yeah, come on, Matt.
You guys are just going to roll over and tickle their tummies. No, look, first of all, look, I thought, yeah, England... And actually, I was listening to your guys' podcast, Tim. Was it just today, I think? I think even you guys, when you went through that game, and Phil, who's obviously the most balanced rugby pundit any of us know, basically went through the litany of calls and events that broke your way. And then it was like, so you guys went through that and went, oh, yeah, and there was that penalty and there was that forward pass and there was that thing he missed and da-da-da-da-da. And, but then we played so well. And so, look, I think it was both. I think you did play really, really well. But Australia, if you look over those four tests, it's the same thing that keeps happening. And so I can't just feel that, like, I don't think there's some massive ref conspiracy. Jaco Pyper is a hometown ref. He always has been. I mean, the cognitive dissonance when he watches that pass go forward, sticks his hand out, is about to call it, and then goes, obviously something in his head goes, oh, no, I just won't. Because his natural thing was, oh, that's clearly a forward pass like everyone else in the stadium saw, but then didn't call it. But, you know, the reason why Phipps didn't milk the penalties, I think he thought he had it. I mean, he had Vunipola literally sat up in his way.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the most ridiculous thing. The Tom Wood swimming down the side, that was the very definition of swimming down the side of a ruck. I mean, all those things. But at the end of the day, I take this up a level. So I think, yeah, you got a few bounces your way in the match, but... I think, are England world class? Yes, I think they are. But the one thing I want to temper back is in what style of team they are. And this comes back to, for example, when we have these conversations with you guys and you say, people are saying, oh, yes, for example, Farrell is the guy who played on the weekend, whose name I'm just blanking on for a second, who played 10 for you.
George Ford.
You know, they're great tens. They're not in Australia's in a Southern Hemisphere idea of ten. You know, they control a game like an English ten might. You know, largely through kicking, maybe through some good defence. I understand Ford apparently at club level has shown a bit more. I still haven't seen it at international level, and I haven't seen it from Farrell either. But they do what's great. And I think what Eddie has done, and I think, again, you guys had this other conversation of, well, why is it that Eddie's managed to get this out of these players? I can tell you exactly why it is. It's because Eddie Jones knows exactly what he feared the most from an England team. And he put that together with knowing how to coach or at least consult towards a Springbok team that won a World Cup. He put those two things together, and that's the team you're looking at. I actually think it's quite limited in a number of ways, but what it's good at, and you saw it on the weekend. I mean, how the hell did they turn that match around? And I can tell you what it was. It was Young's boot, a good chase, and some good defence and putting the pressure back on. I saw... almost nothing else to make me think that this team has a whole lot more. But don't get me wrong, you get those things right and you'll probably beat 8 out of 10 international teams. And I think that's what we saw. It'll put pressure on, it'll cause mistakes, and we know this Australian team is fragile at the moment and they'll crumble underneath it. So, look, I guess in a way, I'm giving you a roundabout compliment is, yes, I do think they're class. I just think we probably need to temper it just a little bit in that, you know, and from the little I know of what's coming through on the bench, I don't see anyone who then blows my mind in terms of, wow, that's going to really suddenly turn England into this, expansive, phase play attacking team. Not that they initially want to be. I don't think Eddie wants to take them there. And I think he's been quite candid in that he thinks the players are quite limited. He said it to any journo who'll listen. I think these guys are limited. But what he does know is that he can use what you guys do really well to beat the crap out of us at the moment. He called it rope-a-dope, and that's exactly what it was. So anyway,
I would just counter that slightly by saying I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Anthony Watson, I do think, is could be potentially one of the best finishers in world rugby on the wing. So I would definitely watch out for him coming back. But New Zealand, they kick more than any other international team and have done. And there's nothing limited about playing rugby in the right part of the field. And I think that, I mean, particularly in the second half, when you were only, because of the missed kick, you were 9 points down. And you were still trying to run from inside your 22 with 63 minutes on the clock. I was scratching my head going, what are they doing? They're expending so much energy in the wrong area of the field. So yeah. I just think there's a bit of a rugby intellect about this England team. They're quite smart in the things that they do. And that's very much like New Zealand
But I think what you're saying, actually, and what you gave a great example of there is, but and they're playing against, and Jones has said it since before he landed in Australia, we're going to play rope-a-dope. Because the intellect that England's showing, which I don't think it's actually brain surgery, right? Playing the right end of the field, is exactly what the Wallabies don't have. And I think we're watching right now an experiment that Checker is had a, you know, the worst year in international rugby history as the result of, which is, can you play running rugby with no plan B at all times? And he even had great weather throughout the whole thing. So it wasn't like we had, you know, pissing down rain and whatever else to kind of, you know, it was, and actually injury-wise, we didn't do too badly. So, you know, I think it's been an incredible experiment in kind of rugby philosophies, and we've come out really badly on the wrong end.
Well, what better time to have an experiment than 3 years out from a World Cup? It's not like you've got it months away. This is why I will still know that Australia, come 2019, are going to be a major, major threat and a proper contender. So I don't read too much into this year.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff, Tim. We're going to leave you there. We know you've got a busy day ahead of you over there. Really appreciate yours and JB's and the team's involvement with us this year. Congratulations to all the English crew. Obviously, the Egg Chaser podcast is out there, guys. They're on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. I'm sure all our listeners are listening already. But thanks, Tim. Thanks for joining us again. And we best luck with the Six Nations all when it kicks off. And we'll try and catch up again soon, hey?
Definitely. Pleasure, gents.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.